It's at 9:21 on Classical Mornings. I'm your host, Jane Stillwell. Now, tenor Ben Bliss joins us today, ahead of the Canadian Opera Company's upcoming production of Rigoletto, opening this Saturday, January 24th, at the Four Seasons Centre for the Performing Arts. Ben will be singing the role of the Duke of Mantua, a debut part for him, though his career has already spanned some of the most renowned opera houses in the world, including the Metropolitan Opera, Glyndebourne Festival, Wigmore Hall and Carnegie Hall, and many others. He's a recipient of the Metropolitan Opera's prestigious Beverly Sills Award and has performed a wide spectrum of repertoire, from Mozart and Wagner to Verdi, which he's going to be singing right soon, this Saturday, in fact. It's an absolute treat to be able to share a conversation with our listeners today. Ben, welcome to Classical Mornings. How are you today?
Thanks. I'm very well. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm happy to be here with you.
I'm so glad. We're going to explore your career, the challenges and joys of singing the Duke, and the fascinating dynamics of Rigoletto itself. Let's talk about your character, Ben. How do you approach the Duke of Mantua, and what do you see as his defining traits?
Very good question. You know, first of all, I think this role is really interesting for me because the roles I've traditionally sung and played in a lot of different operas is usually the kind of fresh-faced prince who's in love with the soprano princess or something.
Yes.
And the Duke of Mantua has a much more sinister side, bordering on, you know, you could call it sociopathy or something. If he was a character dropped into a modern day world, let's say he wouldn't fare very well. But interestingly enough, through Verdi's genius, that kind of rotten core of a character has some of the most famous music in all of opera, some of the most catchy tunes and a lot of brio, and it's a real joy to sing.
Mm. So, how do you find that kind of person? I mean, so often we hear about, you know, people not loving a character, but when you talk to the specific actor or singer, they say, "Oh, yeah, he's a terrible character, but I love him." So, how is that for you?
I think from the dramatic end of things, it's never the performer's job to judge the character, but rather to find, some iteration, twisted or not, of humanity that lives within them, and some way to identify with that or something interesting to grab onto, to explore in that. And again, that's a really interesting sort of tension with myself playing this character, and I think also that you'll feel in the audience, because it's a really, you know, a person who does some pretty despicable things with the complete disregard for the consequences for other people in particular, because this character doesn't really have any consequences. But that goes along with some of, again, the most beautiful, most famous music. So I feel like without judging the character too hard, it would be great to have you hate the character, but also make it hard to hate him.
Yeah, sure. No, there's a real dichotomy there, isn't there?
Definitely. And that's one of the things that makes it feel so relevant and human. It's, you know, you could say something like, those in glass houses shouldn't cast stones, or et cetera. You know, that's for the same reason that people are attracted to documentaries about serial killers or something like that. We've always been interested in the darker side of human nature, and this is a really great expression of that.
Well, describe for us the relationship between the Duke and Rigoletto, and what would have made the Duke, it compelled him to hire Rigoletto.
I think that Rigoletto is someone who is completely subservient and has found his way to survive by finding a powerful person to whom he can always say yes. You know, if you're a disadvantaged person or something and you find someone with something very close to absolute power, you can find out that if you just always say yes to that person and keep them happy, you can survive and maybe even thrive. And I think that's probably the seed from which that relationship germinated.
Pardon me. Hang on, sweetie. Hang on a sec there. For some reason, our music just started just like that, and they're teasing. A good time for the tenor to come on to start singing as we're talking to each other here. Are you okay? Okay, good. Okay.
You didn't hear
that?
I did not, no.
Oh, okay, well, sorry for interrupting.
That's all right.
And so let's talk about then, do you think that the Duke knows that Gilda is the daughter of Rigoletto?
There is a moment in the opera where he figures it out. At the beginning, the sort of exposition begins at the party at the Duke's residence, and he's talking to one of the other characters and saying, you know, I've been seeing this woman in church every week. I don't know who she is. She doesn't know who I am, but it's killing me. I got to figure out who this woman is. She's my next conquest, you know. Mm-hmm. And not terribly long after that, spoiler alert, it's in the first act. He does realize that at first he thinks that it might be the lover of Rigoletto, and then realizes through a little snooping that it is in fact his daughter, who he has tried very hard over the years to kept hidden and away from society, because he knows exactly what's going to happen if someone like the Duke finds out that he has a lovely young daughter.
And have you found an ounce of humanity in the Duke? Because there's got to be something, right?
Certainly, certainly. You know, I have, not to get lost in exposition too much, but before my life in opera, I had a career working for several years in television production in Los Angeles, doing behind the camera type stuff. Mm-hmm. And, I wasn't constantly rubbing elbows with A-list Hollywood celebrities or anything, but I was around enough people whose face and name you would recognize, and I was around them often enough to see and witness people who don't get told no very mm-hmm. often. Mm-hmm. And perhaps no one has really stood up to them and said no in a significant way for a very long time. Mm. And that, in my experience, that changes your perspective. It's hard to keep your feet on the ground when everyone is just saying yes to you all the time. And in some way, I think that's what the Duke is like. And that doesn't excuse culpability for one's actions. However, you can see how the twisted vine could grow under such circumstances, and how, you know, if you're born royal and you've always had everything you wanted and no one has been allowed to say no to you, you can imagine where that could lead. And so again, yeah, that's kind of the seed where I find my entrance into the character, mm-hmm. and can make sense of the decisions and choices he makes.
So the Duke's role, it sits very high in the tenor tessitura. What are the main vocal challenges you encounter with this part?
I'd say singing the role. it is a challenging one, but it's really been on the top of my list of roles that I'd like to perform in my singing career. And when it came time to crack open the score and start learning it, it was great. I got to kind of hit the mattresses and go back and work on some new technical functions in my voice and some new techniques. And, it was great. It was like, somebody who spars using karate for years and then comes to do their first kung fu match after working with a kung fu teacher for a while. I'm really excited about it.
So you've sung a great deal of Mozart, and you've also sung Wagner, which just kind of blew me away when I read that. And now you're singing Verdi. I hate asking people to describe, are you a lyric tenor or a dramatic tenor? But you have to just ultimately sing with your voice, don't you?
Yeah, and I think that you really hit the nail on the head there. It's depending on where you go, if you're speaking about the people, the intendants of opera companies who do casting or reviewers or whatever, and audience members too, it's not just in opera, I guess. In all areas of life, it's easier to kind of think of someone in a certain way and sort of put them in a box. And they go, ah, it's this kind of person. Oh, it's this kind of singer. Okay, great. Now I know what that is, and I don't really have to actively think about it as much. And, you know, in many ways that is useful and works. But of course, things are much more nuanced than that. You know, I've been referred to as a Mozart tenor, and like,
yes.
I don't know if that's actually even really a thing, but, but yes, I am a tenor who has sung a lot of Mozart, but, you know, every voice is different and has a lot of different capabilities and, yes. And also, evolves and changes over time. So maybe I was a Mozart tenor for 10 years and now I'm a Verdi tenor, but I think I've just been a tenor the whole time.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that you can't go and sing some Mozart as well. If you have a healthy instrument, you can sing whatever you need to sing, right?
Exactly. The weekend after our final show here in Toronto, I'll be singing Tamino and the Magic Flute with the St. Louis Symphony
in
St. Louis, Missouri. And,
right.
And, you know, Wagner, as you alluded to, is kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yes.
But even in the Wagnerian repertoire, most of the Wagnerian repertoire I've sung is actually the role of, again, sort of the young, sweet-faced tenor who is a more lyrical voice and not, you know, one of the giant Helden tenor voices that's
right.
kind of anchoring the show. But, yeah, it does make for an interesting contrast.
But and it strikes me that in your interpretation of the Duke, you've had enough experience in life to know about to know a side of the character that you can pull into this, as you've already explained to us.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's why I'm not putting myself in the same category by any means, but Anthony Hopkins' roles that he played when he's
yes.
70 probably have a little more layers and more colors than the roles he played when he was 20. You know, you just have
sure.
more life experience you can pull from, as you mentioned.
Well, this is very exciting. I'm excited to come and see you sing this, particularly as it's your first time singing this role, which is very exciting.
It is very exciting, and it really adds, speaking of layers, it does add another layer to the performance process, and, you know, you try to keep as much of your bandwidth open as possible, but it's hard to deny the fact that a little more of your active mental bandwidth is consumed with, you know, with doing the thing, because it's not in your muscle memory as much from having done 20 different productions of it. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And I've heard that our opening night is sold out or very close to it. So
excellent.
I'm sure we'll have an audience full of eager, active audience members. I'm very excited for that.
I'm excited for you too. And I want to congratulate you on your success to date and for opening night as well. Break a leg and have a lot of fun with it.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here speaking with you this morning.
Likewise. Thanks very much, Ben.
See you at the opera.
Yes,
bye-bye.
Indeed. Okay, bye-bye. Rigoletto opens this Saturday, January 24th at the Four Seasons Center for the Performing Arts, with 7 performances running through February 14th. For tickets, visit coc.ca. Don't miss this riveting production with an all-star cast, including Ben Bliss, in his debut as the Duke of Mantua.